5:05. Tonight, we will take up again House Bill 175. After last meeting, we went through and took a number of the recommendations that we've received and redrafted them into another draft of the bill. And it's the K version, dated 2/6/96. If everybody's in agreement, I'd entertain a motion to accept this as a working draft, and we'll start from there. Representative Elton.
Mr. Chair, I move version K, dated
2/6.
2/6.
96.
Pardon me? Of House Bill 175.
Okay. Thank you. Any objections? Hearing none, I'll have my staff, Amy Doherty, explain the changes to this. Then we can go from there. Amy?
Mr. Chairman, there were several changes incorporated into this version of CSHB 175. We've added a transporter license. Is now included in the bill language for those who provide only transportation services to sport or personal use fishermen. Also, in this draft, the Department of Fish and Game is the only agency from which sport fish guide licenses or operator licenses can be issued. This was done to bring forward discussion on this to see if this is a possibility. There's lots of pros and cons of keeping it within the Department of Fish and Game as well as keeping it within the Department of Commerce, and we look forward to getting that discussion forward. We also took out all subsistence terminology, as we were contacted numerous times by the Native community and asked to do that. We also reinserted the U.S. citizenship requirement for guide licenses. Even though we were cautioned not to do that by legal, we had a lot of concern about some enforcement situations and felt that we would try to reinsert that at this point. Also, we did remove the exceptions to the definitions of the operators and the services. Per the legal memo dated January 29th, some of the definitions may need further expansion because of this. There may be some loopholes. We want to get some feedback on that as well. And anyway, we also have, 9 amendments, I believe. The first two were drafted by George Udermull, and the latter four were drafted by your staff. To come before the committee. We have sent these out to the LIO so that hopefully everyone can respond and speak to all of the possible amendments before us on this draft.
Thank you, Amy. First off, let's start here at this level. Is there any more discussion in reference to K that we want to, or questions that you have? Yes, Mr. Representative Ogden.
I have some questions about some of the changes. The transporter license, the synopsis doesn't exactly point out where the changes are. I'd like to kind of get up to speed on what the language is on the transporter license, and how do you define what's a transporter, and when do they, a transporter, for example, in the hunting industry, the person basically takes the person out and drops them off and then comes back and picks them up later on. They don't, it's kind of hard to take people unless you have like a platform out in say, Cook Inlet. You can take them out and drop them off the platform and then come back and get them later on. I guess what I'm asking is there a definition as far as you don't have a guide on, Amy's pointing to me. Here it is. Show me where it is. I'll read it, and then I can probably answer my
questions. Okay. Thank you, Representative Logan. On page 5, it's line 10 starts the transporter license.
Okay.
And that's that is something we need to discuss a little bit because of there's a lot of people that have felt that the sport fish industry, fly-in sport industry, has a large impact on the fisheries as well as the rest of the people who are involved in the charter boat operations. And so we've stuck it in there for discussion, and it's something that we can talk about. It may be more than we want to consider in this bill, but there is a number of people who feel that they do have a direct impact, particularly on the major river systems. So that's why that's in there. And it's basically patterned after what is in the big game statutes, right?
Follow up, Mr. Chairman?
Representative Ogun, go ahead.
On the transporters that are licensed under occupational licensing to transport for big game hunters, currently have to have a transporter's license and then get a sticker on an airplane. I would wonder if we already have someone licensed under that type of scenario, if it's necessary for them to get a redundant transporter's license to transport fishermen.
I would hope not. I would hope they would either be able to incorporate the exact same license and maybe have fisheries and game on the same form of some type, so that they would only have the one license. It's not my intention, nor do I believe anybody else's intention of trying to increase the amount of workload on anybody. It's a matter of trying to get a reporting system set up so that we can figure out what's going on in the industry. So. But I'll make a note of that and make sure then we'll follow up on that.
Yeah, as a follow-up, Mr. Chairman, I think it would be appropriate to maybe exempt or have it be the same license and just maybe add. And I don't know if this language does this in this bill, but have them possibly add under the guiding, big game guiding situation, add transporters for fishing for commercial, or transporting fishermen for a fee, so we say under that same licensing scenario.
Yeah, it may be. You know, we're trying to consolidate this licensing so that there's not more overwork for everybody. For example, the two-tier license that we've talked about in this thing originally started out talking about putting the operator's license under commerce and then putting the guide's license under fish and game. This new version gives you both of those licenses under fish and game, so you only have to go to fish and game to get your license. Now, fish and game also has a transporter license for six-pack licenses and boats and stuff like that. So we're envisioning that this would all fall under fish and game. Now, if they've got their transporter license from Commerce already as far as a big game, there's no reason they can't just have some stipulation is that they show that license when they go in to get the rest of their fish and game licenses. So, I mean, there's a number of different ways you can do it to make it not more onerous or more volume of paperwork and everything. I think we have to do that. We have to figure out how to write it in here so that that intent is comes across. Anybody else got any questions? Or we've got before you tonight also, and like Amy said, we have faxed to the LIO tonight the a couple of different. As we progress through this thing, there's always going to be changes until I think we get down to the final thing. But there's a couple changes and amendments that have been proposed, both by legal and also by our staff. So I would like to go through those right now. Does everybody have those amendments? There should be three sheets. Have you got yours, Representative Ogun?
Yes, I do.
The first one is K1, dated today's date, and it goes with page 4, line 23 through 24. It removes on line 23. It states right now an identification card that has been issued to the fishing guide by a state or federal agency and bears a photograph of the person These are things that the guide has to have on his person. We felt, everybody has felt, that that is a stipulation that's probably more than what is required, and we're recommending we delete that and then renumber the rest of those paragraphs. I would entertain a motion to do that if so. Representative Elton.
Mr. Chair, I'll make the motion, but I want to make sure I understand. It's more than just deletion, right? It's insertion of the new language. Ben?
Yeah, you're right. Excuse me.
Mr. Chair, I move Amendment K1.
Take a discussion. Any questions? Or any objections?
Maybe a little discussion.
Okay.
This simply eliminates some kind of an ID card provided by somebody. And it just says that a driver's license or similar, they just have to have some kind of picture ID issued by a state or federal license or state
right.
or federal agency.
Yeah, this cleans it up.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's correct. I spoke incorrectly a few minutes ago in saying that it was deleted. This actually just cleans it up by replacing that.
I've got no objection.
Okay. If there's no objection, we'll accept that as an amendment. Next one is K2, Amendment K2, page 4, line 17. After the word fishing, we want to insert from a vessel so that it would read, a fishing guide shall be physically present while a client is engaged in sport or personal use fishing from a vessel. And again, clarification of what the intent was. Understand? Is there a motion to?
Mr. Chair, I'll make a motion again, but I'm a little bit confused. Will this motion of moving Amendment K2, will that also be a motion then to adopt the language that is deleted or deletion of the language on page 6, line 19?
You're correct. Let's talk about that. I'll explain. Let's see if I can explain that one. On page 6. Line 19, that second part of that is just removing the words accompanying end to I'll have to have Amy. I want to explain again why we're removing the accompanying end from page 6.
I think we're removing the requirement that the guide always has to be present. What happened is we were given some examples where the guide, actually people go to this person's lodge and some of them actually choose to meander off by themselves, and that, and I guess what the definition is, it is, they couldn't do that. Let's say they arrive at some lake somewhere and two of them want to tread up a different stream. They'd still be they would still be guided. However, the guide wouldn't have to be physically present all the time.
Okay. Mr. Chair, I'd move the amendment labeled K2.
Well, we've got a motion. Any discussion? No discussion, any opposition to... Yes, go right ahead, Representative.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Do I understand this, that the guide has to be present with them if they're fishing from a vessel, but on the ground they can meander off and do a little bit of their own fishing?
That's right.
That's the intent.
Okay.
Just based upon the logistics of how things happen.
Kind of hard to wander off in the vessel when it's out in the water. Unless you got your Jesus shoes on.
Something like that. Okay. Is there any objections to this amendment? Hearing none, we'll approve that, those two items. The next one are amendments that have come up this afternoon that staff thought we should take a look at. And I think we'll discuss each one first before we have a motion. Amendment number 3 on page 4. Line 1. After the word issued, insert if required. This has to do with, for example, lake fishing or river fishing when you're in a raft or something like that, or a canoe. If you're guiding somebody in a canoe, you're not required to have a Coast Guard license. So we wanted to make sure that we defined that a little bit better. Representative Elton.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I mean, I understand that. That makes sense. I'm wondering if, and there may be a provision elsewhere in the bill that I don't remember, but I mean, what if it's a guide who's using an airplane and flying to the lake, and you land on the lake and you provide the service and then leave? I mean,
as present, the Coast Guard doesn't require you have a six-pack license.
But there's no requirement for an FAA license or having...
There are requirements under FAA regulations 14 CFR Part 135 that cover aircraft, and that would then come under, I think, transporter license.
So that person would be both a transporter then and a guide?
Could be.
If they direct it.
Thank you.
Representative Ogden.
Under this whole section here of 1640360, what is the scenario here if, let's say, the guy doesn't have his Coast Guard license or doesn't have his first aid card? Is this an offense that's administratively disciplined, or is it a violation of that he could get a ticket from Fish and Wildlife Protection Officer, or how does this whole scenario play out as the guys?
Just a second. There's some place. Let me find it in here.
And maybe I can preface that, or not preface it because I already said it, but a little background on where I'm coming from with this is I'm always a little concerned when we have various licensing agencies, and I think I've articulated this as a point before, that end up being the policeman to make sure that the guy has his Coast Guard license. If you don't have your Coast Guard license, we're not going to give you your license. And I think, you know, the Coast Guard gets paid to enforce their regulations. And as a guide, the big game guides, that you wouldn't get your permit issued unless you had all your paperwork jumped through by DNR. They made sure all your paperwork was filled out first. And so DNR gave the kind of DNR this license to create this real onerous reporting and licensing and fees and the whole nine yards. And their big hammer was that if you didn't dot all your I's and cross all your T's with DNR to getting all your permits and doing the whole nine yards, you wouldn't get your license. And so basically, Department of Commerce was turning into the enforcement agent for DNR. I think DNR should go out and enforce their own regulations instead of, so.
In an ideal, perfect world, I think that's a great idea, but I think with the budget restraints that we have and the protection of wildlife officers that we're able to hire and put on because of the budget constraints, I think we have to narrow it down a little bit, try to get some control. And that is one reason that it's done that way, as you've explained. And it'll be done basically the same way here, is that whether it's done through commerce or whether it's done through fish and game, that when you go in to get your operator's license, you have to have all of the scenario of what licenses are required to be a valid operator in the state of Alaska. Enforcing it is, we just don't have the people to enforce it if you want to do it on an individual department by department basis. So, and I think that's one reason that we try to tie it down to the licensing aspect of it, so that at least at one place, at one point in time, we can find out what you've got and what you don't have. And then, of course, if you don't have it when you try to get your license, you're not issued your license. And again, you're back into the same thing. You may go out there and operate illegally, but and the odds are of not getting caught very often. But that's something we have to live with our budget constraints, I think. And also on page 6, Representative Ogun, on line 5, it talks about is if you violate any of those regulations which fall under 360 falls under there as a Class A misdemeanor. There was some concern when we first started this thing, and the first draft of it had not having sending in your reports, for example, also turned out to be a misdemeanor, and we've tried to redraft that so that the fact that you didn't turn in your reports for the year didn't make you a felon or a criminal. There was some kind of a fining mechanism that they could go through the department if you hadn't reported. And you also, of course, wouldn't get your license for the next year if you hadn't turned in your report. So. Okay, that's the first part of that First Amendment. The second part of that amendment is on page 4, also on line 30. After licensure, we want to add the words, if required. Same reason. Okay, I'd like to move Amendment 3 if we can, then.
Well, Mr. Chair, you're looking at me. I'll move Amendment number 3.
Thank you, Representative Elton. Is there any objection to Amendment 3? So adopted. Again, the next one is Amendment 4, page 2, line 18. After the word shall, they want to insert, in addition to the penalties imposed by law. We feel that this was a typo. You'll see in the section above that, it is in the section above that, and we feel it was omitted in this second section, both of them speaking about convictions or then subsequent convictions. So on line 18, in addition to the penalties imposed by law, was left out of the paragraph. And we want to insert. As you can see on line 13 and 14, it's in the conviction part. Representative Elton.
Mr. Chair, I move amendment number 4.
Amendment number 4 has been moved. Is there any objection?
No, Jack, I'm glad to see this section in here. It was one of my concerns. I appreciate it being addressed.
All right. If there's no objection, then amendment 4, number 4 is passed. Representative Ogun, go ahead.
Just as a point of discussion, is this a double jeopardy?
I don't know.
And something that might be looked at as just a point of law, if you have, and it's routinely done, you know, I mean, there's clearly precedent for it, but, and I'm for it, because I supported this, but.
I don't know if it's double jeopardy. In the first part on line 13, it says in your first conviction, it talks about the court may revoke the license, and then the subsequent convictions. On line 18, it says you shall revoke your license.
So. Okay, the court shall revoke. Okay, this is not an administrative action, so
no.
It wouldn't be double jeopardy. Okay. All right, thanks.
Okay, so next was amendment number 5. On page 4 also, to delete line 4 and 5. Trying to remember why we're doing this.
Because they don't need to have an employer before they get their guide.
Oh, I see.
They need to have verification when they're on the field, though.
Yeah, some of the concern was on this, the reason we want to eliminate this was the concern was that with this in there, you have to be an employee already to get a guide's license. And the concern is that there will be a number of different guide people who will be guiding for different people during the year, so they'll go down and get a guide license, and then they can work for anybody during the year. This, by keeping this in there, you're required to already be employed by an operator to go get a guide's license. And so the this amendment would remove item number 5 out of there. And then you wouldn't have to already be, in other words, a operator wouldn't have to give proof to somebody so they can go get their guide license.
And they would still have to be employed by an operator to guide, is that correct?
To guide, correct.
So basically they're a free agent, they aren't subject to
correct.
The operator's whim.
It's no different than the commercial fisherman going down and getting his commercial license and then going out on whatever boat he wants to go on to. So. We want to move this, or we got more discussion? Representative Elton, I see you're in statute. Do you, you need a minute?
But Mr. Chair, no, I don't need a minute. I'm comfortable with this. I've jumped ahead,
okay,
so
fine.
I will move amendment number 5.
Any objections to amendment number 5? Amendment number 5 is approved. Amendment number 6 takes us to page 6, line 11. It removes the word road after state and inserts the word highway. There was some concern about the marine highway would be part of a system, and by using the word just road, that you would end up not including the marine highway system in that area. So by putting the word highway in there, you are covering both marine and regular road highways. Representative Elton.
Mr. Chair, I'll move amendment number 6 for the purpose of discussion.
Number 6 is moved. Any discussion? Representative Elton.
I understand the purpose for it and perhaps the need. I guess the question I have is, since you were still saying not reasonably accessible by foot from the state road system, I mean, I'm assuming that the only part of the marine highway system that this would cover would be the terminal areas. Of this, because obviously you're not going to be stepping off the side of the ship, and if all we're covering is the terminal areas, I guess I don't really understand the need for this, because most of the terminal areas are connected by road and part of the regular road system.
There are a number of areas in southeast here that are not, I mean, they're like on an island.
Right. But for example, Angoon, you get off the terminal and you drive off and you're on a road system. And I'm trying to think of a situation in which you wouldn't be. I mean,
Pelican.
Pelican.
Yeah. And that was the example that was given to us. And I think Elfin Cove is served also.
I don't know if Elfin Cove's getting a ferry, but Pelican, you might be right. I mean, it's a walk system, I guess. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, I don't know how often it would come up, but it didn't. Okay, any more discussion on Amendment 6? Any objection to approving Amendment Number 6? Amendment Number 6 will be considered approved then. Okay, so we have an amended CS before us now. We've got a couple of different stations online to talk about the new draft. Kevin Delaney is also online if we have any questions for the department. So I think we'll go in. I want to caution everybody on teleconference or those that might testify here locally that we would appreciate if you would keep your testimony to the new draft and the amendments that were just made. We don't want to get into a long, lengthy discussion tonight about the pros and cons of what we're doing. We've had numerous meetings about whether we should be doing this bill and not doing this bill. I would appreciate that you keep everything tied to the amendments to the draft and also to the CS that we have. Representative Ogun.
Mr. Chairman, if you might allow me to indulge just a little bit on one of the amendments we made that
sure.
A point that was brought to light. It was Amendment Number 2 on page 4, line 17, after fishing. To the vessel, especially the area of question is page 6, line 19. And we deleted the company, and I guess one of the things that brought my attention and my frame of reference in previous life on former guide board, the transport, the whole transporter issue here, if we, you know, we just deleted anyone who runs, or if you delete, we just deleted it. Anyone who runs a drop-off service and says to the guy, like he takes him out, he's a transporter, okay? He's not an operator or a guide now. He's just a transporter. And the transporter takes a guy up the river and drops him off on the river. If he's a transporter, he legally can't say, because we have deleted this accompaniment thing, he can't say, I know a good hole right around the corner right there.
He can't say that.
Because he turns into a guide. And I think this is going to be trust me, from my experience, this is going to end up being a major contentious point between the transporters and the guides. And in the hunting industry, it's the major point of contention is between the transporter and guide in the hunting industry, because the transporter takes people out and drops them in on top of the guides, and the guides have these use areas, of course, and it's a little bit more complicated that way, but. It's really a gray area now, because it may open up anybody's a transporter. It's going to keep a lot of people from getting their guide license unless they're fishing in the boat. That's the only people who will probably get a guide license, because if they take them up, they can. And I think you and I both know that a lot of people will say, "There's the hole. You know, here's the bait. This is what's because." It's a tendency of the client to be inquisitive of the person that's driving them out in the boat, dropping them off. Where do I go fishing? And it's takes a very, very highly honorable person to not divulge information, because as soon as they do, they become a guide. And there's
understand.
It kind of might blow the whole intention. I'm sorry I didn't bring that up ahead of time.
No, that's fine. And this is a working document. I don't expect to get this thing moved out of here tonight. And you know, if we've created a problem by that amendment, we can give it some thought over the next few days, and we can change that back again. I'm more than willing to come to anybody that wants to, you know, make this better. Again, my whole emphasis in starting this whole thing in the first place was to set up some way of getting reporting done on how many fish are being caught so that we have a handle on what the sport industry is doing. And this thing continues to, I don't know whether by design or not, but it continues to grow as we go further into it. And at some point in time, I'm going to throw my hands up in the air and cut it right back to where we originally started and just pass a bill. So, but we'll take some more testimony tonight. Again, we will not try to pass it. We will be open for the next week or so on other ideas. We'll start in Kodiak. We have three people online with one of them to testify. Eric Stirp.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of your committee. I see the working draft has gone from two licenses now to three. I'm uncertain how someone could be in the lodge or charter business without having a transporter license on top of a fishing guide license and a fishing support services operator license. It's redundant, it's unnecessary, and I applaud Representative Ogun for his analogy in the big game commercial services industry and the contention between transporters and guides and people that do not comply with the transporter regulations and the total lack of enforcement regarding transporter issues that step over the line for guides. Also, with what you said in mind, Representative Osterman, keeping the testimony to the amendments in this new working draft, my only other hiccup at this point, without having more time to mull this over, is on page 4, line 16. A fishing guide should be physically present while a client is engaged in sport fishing or personal use fishing. This is not the big game guiding industry. This is not a public safety issue, Bill. And I'm concerned what the intent of the law is here when it says physically present. If there's six people standing on a river and they're spread out 300 yards apart, and you're standing at the end helping one and moving between the six clients, are you physically present in the field or not? Or if you put your clients on the river, and your base camp, in our case, i.e. a vessel, is anchored in the same bay, you go back to the boat to cook dinner, is that considered physically present enough to satisfy the intent of enforcement? I would encourage you to delete that line. Again, we're not dealing with public safety here. We're not killing people. We're not having them fall off the mountain. We're not chasing dangerous game. In the case of saltwater fishing, you're very definitely present in the field. Representative Elton's comments on your highway issue there, there's another line that can be deleted. Again, I don't think somebody's going to step off the state ferry and go fishing in saltwater. With that, thank you very much. I will be in touch with you on the phone.
Yeah, thank you, Eric. On one of the amendments we made, on page 6, line 19, in the definition of a fishing guide, we made the amendment to take out the words accompanying and made it read personally direct in the hopes that that would clarify the stream bank concern that you had. You might give that some thought, and when we talk on the phone, you can.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Ogun.
Mr. Stirrup. Good to hear from you again. I served with him on the Game Commercial Services Board. On your comment on page 4, line 16, we amended it to say from a vessel. So the fishing guide shall be physically present while a client is engaged in sport or personal use fishing from a vessel. That's it.
Are you still there, Eric?
Yes. Representative Osterman and Representative Ogun, I understand those amendments. However, I still believe that those parts to this draft are unnecessary. I mean, there's a certain amount of
Okay, thank you, Eric. Appreciate your testimony tonight. Next, we'll go to Sitka. We have a Barbara Bingham. Thank you, Barbara. It's my intention, or was my intention with the transporter license, is that is strictly towards, gauged towards people who are doing just transporting and they're not guiding. So if you did have your operator's license, you would not necessarily need a transporter license as well. As far as the mothership concept, I don't think we've addressed that at all in this bill. You're correct. The way this thing is drafted, that would make it legal. That's why I say we haven't addressed the mothership concept, and that's something that I've made a note of, and we'll talk about it and see if there's some way to fix it. Thank you for your testimony, Barbara. Is Teresa Weiser or Weiser there?
Of a Crown Pot violation. For some reason,
Thank you, Teresa. Appreciate your comments tonight. We'll take them into consideration. Next, we'll go to Anchorage. There's a Ken Larson.
Yes, I'm here.
Go ahead, Ken.
I believe that what I understood from one of the other questions, as long as you have a fishing service and operator license and a fishing guide license, you are covered for transporting people and fishing off your own boat. You do not necessarily need the transport license beyond that. Is that the correct interpretation?
That is my intent, and we will take that to legal and make sure that that's correct.
It could involve a simple statement, if there is such a thing, that if you've got the two, you don't need the one, as long as you're on your boat or aircraft. That's all I have. Thanks.
Okay, thank you, Ken. Next, we'll go to Fairbanks. We have a Dennis Petrie.
Yes, sir. Dennis Petrie. As I look over this, as an owner-operator, do I have to have both the fishing service operator's license and a fishing guide license, both?
No, you don't.
All just, I gotta have is the guide license for myself?
And if you're an operator, you have to have the operator license, and not the guide license.
Okay, well, owner-operator, I just need the $75 license, and then not the fishing guide license also.
That's correct. You have to... That's correct. If your operation includes guiding fishermen, yes.
Well, their operation includes guiding fishermen. I just sell tickets.
Then you don't need it, no.
All right. That's basically all I have for this. Thank you.
All right. Thanks, Dennis. And these are our intentions. And if somebody finds something different, and we're constantly looking at this thing, and the concerns of having two licenses if you're an operator and also a guide, is one that we're getting away from if we haven't done it already.
Representative Osman?
Yes.
Kevin Delaney, I just wanted to let you know that we have Bud Hodgson here in Anchorage, too, when he's not at the LIL.
All right, thanks, Kevin. Next, we will go to Mike Kramer in Fairbanks. Legal. I think you ought to take
occurred at that meeting, and I believe that's still the justification now, despite recent talk about making sure there's a fund there for potentially injured clients. But I think that's a way to keep the small operator down, to keep new operators from getting into the business and to close the door tonight. Someone else made a comment about distinguishing between port fish guides and a commercial fishery division. I don't see how this bill is going to do that. I would be curious to hear from Representative Osterman whether this indeed will separate us from the Commercial Fishery Entry Commission, and whether, when this bill passes, whether or not we will still be required to sign up with the Entry Commission and get our triangles for $35, I believe they are now, for each boat, raft, or whatever we take down a river. As far as reporting goes, I still think that that's under abuse for passage of this bill. I don't think fishing scams can really acquire anything more from this bill than they could get out of the original licensing scheme that was in place last year. I believe they already have as much data as they can possibly disseminate, and that if you talk to individual biologists, that they would expect to tell you they're really not that interested. Maybe with how that they are in salmon and a few streams, but when you're telling a grayling guide and surveying, that the whole reason you have to register is from the reporting requirement that Fish and Game needs to know. I believe that doesn't hold much water. If that did, then you would require those king stamps that passed a couple years ago. We'd have to return those to Fish and Game. That would give a good indication, provide some good data on the king stamps. However, we just buy those king stamps and we don't have to turn them in, and no one knows how many kings are taken as regards to that stamp. I realize I'm running out of time. One other concern I have is that the guys can't contract with clients. I believe this might be a way for competitive guys in particular areas to harass each other. If they see some guy approach a potential fisherman, of course they're going to turn him into the nearest law enforcement. And I think that has a lot of potential for being abused. I can't see why guys can't meet somebody on a riverbank and agree to take them fishing, whether you have a sport fish operator's license or not. Thank you.
Thank you, Mike, for your comments. Is Ken Alt there?
Mr. Chairman?
Yes, Ken, go ahead.
A comment as to the process that's been involved here. And my question is, why hasn't ADMG allowed the registration system to work? Last year was the first year of this system, and I feel that if ADFNG would work with this system, that possibly it could provide the information that they need. There's another question similar to the one that Mike Kramer brought up, and relative to Coast Guard licenses that would be required. Normally I use rafts or small rentals, yes, and just wondered how that would fit in this licensing scheme. So in summary, I would still recommend my comment at the last teleconference that this entire bill scrap. I feel that the added cost in time and money to the guide, and also the added cost to the state of Alaska, the increased bureaucracy, would not be outweighed by any of the supposed benefits. Thank you.
Thank you, Ken. Next, we'll go to Ketchikan. Dennis Ketchum. Yeah, Dennis?
Yes.
Yeah, to clarify that, you're correct. That is one of the goals. We will have that removed out of the next draft.
Regulations that establish
mandatory logbook program for operators and charter vessels for outfitters. Article owners of dry skin barrels in order to monitor the ship's camp harvest effort. I imagine that could be broad and cover all species. Get your information quite easily that way. So, I just kind of keep going through this. We can get more amendments and more work drafts. Yeah, I'm sure we're pretty much doing the same thing. Just start getting money and make more requirements for it. I don't feel good for it. Oh, yes, and somebody just mentioned you want to know how many operators are here in Southeast. We have to register. And I have a copy here, about 10 pages, of all the operators and owners in Southeast. And all I have to do is go to Fish and Game and request, and they gave it to me. And that tells you exactly how many boats are involved, and who owns them, and where they live, their address, and everything. Along with the King Salmon Management Plan, if they could enact that for our logbook, which would be required every 2 weeks to the department. I talked to the Department of Fish and Game today.
Thank you, Dennis. I would appreciate if you would drop me a note or fax me a note on those statutes that you were quoting tonight, and let me read through them. You could fax me, or anybody that wants to give more input can fax me at 465-4956.
Okay, thank you. That's under the King Salmon Management Plan. Southeast Alaska King Salmon Management Plan.
Thank you, Dennis. Next, we have Petersburg, Barry Bracken.
Good evening, Mr. Sherman, members of the committee. Appreciate the opportunity to testify. We're notified of the change in the schedule a little late, so I think I may have missed some of the preamble, but we've got to listen to most of the testimony and just have a couple of other comments to add. I'd like to thank the committee for sticking with this project. And so obviously you put a lot of work into it since last week. Beat up pretty badly by some of the folks, and he responded to a lot of the can actually track the individuals who are just service operators and those who are also sport fish guides. I fit into that category, and I certainly would not mind paying the additional $25. I think that information would be important to the department for tracking who is doing what. Short of that, I think that we might want to consider retaining the registration. However, I faxed a message to you last week expressing some concern over the 1996 registration form, and perhaps this is better addressed to Kevin Delaney with ADF&G, but I don't see any reference to registration in the revised bill, and I'm curious whether that regulation will be rescinded if and when HB 175 passes in whatever form. And if not, I think we definitely need to modify that form to provide more meaningful information. For example, the 1996 form has no place for the Alaska business license. It has no place to indicate whether you are a service operator or a guide or both, and it doesn't require your Coast Guard license number on there. So I'm afraid that that registration form as presented this year will invite anyone who has a CMDC permit to register as a guide, and it's certainly going to dilute the effectiveness of that program.
Thank you, Barry. I appreciate your comments, and we will take a look at, I don't know whether we can give intent to Department of Fish and Game that in their methodology of handing out these licenses, they can figure out some way of keeping track whether it's all done on one form, and they have to check off the box and which one they're going to be involved in. I don't know, but again, it's not our intent to create any more paperwork than we absolutely have to, although we know we are creating paperwork. But we're trying to keep it down to exact minimums. Kevin Delaney, Bud Hodson, you have any comments before we go off?
I'll let Bud go first here, Representative Hodson.
Yes, thank you, Representative Hodson. I do have a couple of comments, and one of those has to do with the word company. And one of your amendments removed the word company, and I'll say it because I talked to her yesterday and today. But I believe that the word accompanied should remain in the definition of a fishing guide, they fall through a gap because they may not be in the field by definition. So those, I think, need some thought. Two other comments, if I may. Transporters, that, you know, there's currently a transporter's licensing requirement in statute. It's for big game hunting guys. And it would seem to me logical that that same thing would apply to this. Meaning that if I already have a transporter's license, if I'm Wings of Alaska and I have a transporter's license in Juneau, and my airplane already has a sticker on it, then I would already qualify as a transporter for the sport fishing industry. So it's important that, I think in this bill, if you're going to reference transporters, that you go back to those statutes and you reference that, because then you're talking a transporter, the transporter, the transporter. You're not making two different categories of transporters. And those that already are transporters would automatically be a transporter, and to them, this wouldn't affect them because they already qualify. So I think that's important that you do that, and you might simply be able to just reference those statutes. And then you don't need to get into the whole licensing thing. They just have to do that. For clarification, sport fishing lodges, the Arrow lodges, are not required by the FAA to have a Part 135 certificate. They operate under Part 91. There is some consideration to bring them under the 135 umbrella, but currently they do not, fly-out lodges do not have to have a 135 certificate. They could not get a transporter's license without a 135 certificate, but they could easily become a sport fishing services operator far easier than they could become a transporter. Let's see, I think that covers most of it, although I do want to make comments on page 2 and the penalties and revocation. From what I read on this, because it references the actual licenses, and as a fishing guide, what I'm required, if I don't have my fishing guide license on me, there's one violation. And if I get two of those violations, I'm out of business. And I don't know if commercial fisheries or any other industry where two strikes and you're out, especially two strikes that could be not even intentional. And I would prefer and rather see you go in with some type of a fine system or really identify that it would have to be some major type of a violation with intent and everything else before you start talking about pulling somebody's license and not allowing them to operate anymore. I think that these are real hard, and I think that once industry actually looks at that, they're going to be extremely vocal about it. I don't think they've kind of paid much attention to that at this time. So those are my comments, and I hope they were helpful. I'll kind of stop at that time. If you have any questions, I'm here listening. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you, Bud. You mentioned the sport fish lodges in Part 135, and then they're also, now they're covered on a Part 91. Is that what you said?
Yeah, Part 91, Mr. Chairman, is general aviation. That's Part 91 of the FAA rules. It's general aviation. Part 135 is for commercial operators, like Wings of Alaska, for example, is Part 135. Myself, I operate under Part 91, which is just general aviation for clarification.
Yeah, okay, thank you, Bud. Any questions? Thanks, Bud. Kevin, you got any comments?
I think a couple of quick ones here. One, the gentleman that referenced the Southeast Alaska King Salmon Management Plan pointed out a tool that we do have under that plan, and that is for the commissioner to adopt a reg that would require guides to keep a logbook there. What we have in that is, if we were to pursue it, let me put it this way, if we were to pursue the reporting system in that manner, that would require the Board of Fisheries to go through things on literally a fishery-by-fishery basis, or at least a region-by-region basis, and adopt that. One of the, I think, strengths of this plan is you get that statewide all at one time, but that individual is correct. We do have the power to adopt those regs. For Mr. Bracken there, we had given some thought to that, and we spoke to the chair of the Alaska Board of Fisheries today, Larry Engel, and he expressed a willingness to certainly to rescind those regs should the statute be adopted. And so that is something that we've spent some time thinking about, but that was a real good comment. And that's all I have right now.
All right, thanks, Kevin. Appreciate it. Is there anybody on teleconference that I've missed?
I'm from Fairbanks.
Somebody in Fairbanks?
I'm from a person in Tampa.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman, my name is Patrick Bookie, and I'd like to testify on behalf of your bill here, as opposed to one of the, especially on page 2, lines 16, 17, and 18, for subsequent violations. It seems to me that within the state we have a very uneven distribution of enforcement personnel as it currently stands, and this will only actually apply this procedure, this area here, because of just a pure chance of being picked up by the proper authorities to a limited number of people. And so it doesn't really have a valid effect upon all of the people that would that the intention that Bill is there to enforce upon. It's going to put an unfair burden on those in the areas where there is enforcement or where accidents occur. It also does not distinguish between two different areas. One is that in the operation of the fishing or guiding business for fish, and the taking of sport fish for other persons, and that of one's own personal hunting or something else other than that during the time. He may accidentally shoot loose and walk across the line and guilty of a crime here unintentionally, and then have been convicted of one other offense and loses his right to a livelihood here. So that, I believe, this portion of the bill should be looked very substantially and either removed or somehow rewritten, because it's not really equitable. I'd also like to ask a question of the bill, and in the working draft on page 7, line 6, number 6, outfitting means of provision of equipment or services, and yet I cannot find anywhere within the bill where outfitting is mentioned. And I'm wondering if this was intended somewhere to pick up the bareboat operators or those lodge operators who are providing equipment for fishermen, that drive them themselves. And this is, I had a question for the committee basically or on the bill on that, because it doesn't speak to that anywhere within the bill. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you, Patrick. What was your, spell your last name for me, please.
C-O-O-K-E-Y.
All right, thank you very much, Patrick. Do we have anybody in the audience that wishes to speak to the bill? Seeing none, are there any more comments tonight from members of the committee? Representative Elton.
Well, Mr. Chair, just something I'd like to have the committee think about, and that's on page 2, lines 27 and 28, which makes some of the information that's collected under this this bill proprietary. And I mean, just as a general comment, I mean, I have a problem with this kind of bills, and I can see in the provisions in 1640-360F, for example, I can see why some of that information is proprietary. I mean, I'm not sure that it's in the best interest of individual guides or operators to indicate how many fish they've caught and where they're catching them. But I'm somewhat concerned that the broad nature of this exclusion may even preclude the department from totaling up the number of fish and the number of guides and saying, this is the number of guides and this is the number of fish that were caught. In addition to that concern, I mean, I guess I'd also like to point out that the information that you're keeping proprietary here includes just the penalty section and the definition section. And I'm not sure why we need to have the definition section under the contained in this proprietary information section. But I mean, I will do some checking between now and the next committee meeting, because I certainly don't want us to be in a position where the department can't say this is the total number of fish and this is the total number of guides. I can see where the department may not want to have to release the total number of fish that an individual guide has taken and where they've taken those fish from. And I don't have a problem with that being proprietary information. I mean, that's the same kind of standard that we have elsewhere. The only other comment on the proprietary information, I mean, this also would keep information, license information, if I go in and buy an operator's license or a sport fish guide license, proprietary, and I think that's a little bit unusual when people are releasing information they're getting from my automobile driver's license to the public. It just seems odd that we can release auto DMV information, we can't release this kind of information. So I'll take a look at that, but I'd urge the committee to consider it too prior to the next meeting.
All right. Thank you, Representative Milton.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
Yeah, this is Kevin Delaney, Fish and Game again. Mr. Chair, on page 5 in section parents F at the top of the page, 1 through, in sentence number 1, one concern that we have is the obligation in this case to collect the information on the number of salmon, halibut, and other fish taken in all cases at all times. We certainly see the need for collecting this information in many of the fisheries for which one decision-making body or another is developing management plans or is likely to. But in the case of, well, I guess to use some examples that people have raised tonight, of a grayling stream in the interior, there are a number of times when it would not be very useful to collect this information. We do collect it regularly through our creel censuses in situations where we need to do in-season management, and we collect it statewide beginning in 1995 through our statewide harvest survey as just as a background information for the entire state. It's not that we have any opposition whatsoever to going ahead collecting this wherever it would be necessary. It's just simply the obligation to collect it in all cases, even in those that wouldn't be cost effective or wouldn't be useful in the near term. That's where our concern lies here, and just by changing shall, may, would I think give us the flexibility to do it where it's needed and not where it's not. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks, Kevin. Although this is really the heart of what this whole bill started out to be, was for you guys to collect the information and have the data, so.
Yes, and I agree with that. It's a simple matter of whether there are cases where it would not be either useful or cost effective. And certainly there are cases where it is needed.
If we remove the words "and other fish" out of there, would that simplify it a little bit?
I have to give that one just a little bit of thought. Off the top of my head, I would say it would help, yes. We may, there are certainly situations I can envision where we may want to collect that information. We do manage fisheries for other species, certainly, and some of those have some pretty significant issues surrounding the management of.
All right, well, that's fine. The other thought that I've had on that also is that we could also insert the words after other fish as needed or something like that, which would give you some latitude.
Yeah, that's grasping the point there. I wouldn't want to be put in a situation where, in a case where it's neither cost effective nor necessary. And I know those are terms that, those are judgment calls that people could disagree on. We'd like to work with you on that and allow ourselves the flexibility where perhaps if after a number of years of collecting information in certain fisheries, we find that the information we're collecting through either our krill census or our statewide harvest survey is corroborated by the information we get through this process, that there would be an opportunity to then use the most effective one rather than all three.
Yeah, fine. Thanks, Kevin. Representative Elton?
I think that his point is maybe well taken, and maybe one of the ways to get around that is something that you suggest, shall collect for halibut and salmon and may collect at the department's discretion on other species.
Yeah. Okay, that's all I have for tonight. We will take all this into consideration and make some more amendments to this thing. I don't have it scheduled for another time yet, but as soon as we do, we'll notify all the LIO offices and send out redrafts of the new CS. Thanks, everybody, for their participation tonight. Appreciate the info. We'll adjourn this meeting at 6:33. 6:33.